Well, it's good to see everyone this morning. You did tilt this. I am. I'm lopsided. We're going to continue our series, Real Christianity. There we go. From 1 John, we're going to be in 1 John chapter 3, if you want to follow along in your own Bible. 1 John chapter 3, looking at real Christianity. And here is how the text reads. See how great a love the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called children of God, and such we are. For this reason, the world does not know us, because it did not know Him. Beloved, now we are children of God. And it has not appeared as yet what we will be. We know that when He appears, we will be like Him, because we will see Him just as He is. And everyone who has this hope fixed on Him purifies himself just as He is pure. When we talk about real Christianity, how you tell real Christianity from false Christianity, real Christianity is realizing that we are children of God. Now, there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, we're all children of God. You hear that. It's so flippantly said, well, we're all God's children. Biblically, we are not all God's children. That's not true. We are all part of God's creation, but we are not all God's children. In fact, later on in chapter 3, John is going to say in verse 10, by this the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. Anyone who does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor the one who does not love his brother. He talks about the children of God and the children of the devil. We were all once children of the devil, children of darkness. In the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 12, he says, but as many as received Him, to them He gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in His name. And you believe in Jesus, when you receive Him, you have the right to become children of God. You can't become something you already are. You have the right to become children of God. Becoming a child of God, it comes after receiving Him, comes after believing Him. You have the right to be born again into His family and to become a child of God. Being a child of God is so important. Paul emphasizes this in Romans 8. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are sons of God. In verse 16 and 17, the Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs, also heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with Him, so that we may also be glorified with Him. Verse 19, for the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. One of the great blessings that we have is realizing that we are now children of God. We are sons and daughters of God. The greatest thing that happened in my life, the keystone event of my life, I had nothing to do with. I had absolutely nothing to do with what I consider one of the most important things that ever happened to me. I was the fifth child to be born to Howard and Margaret Murphy. I've had older brothers and sisters. I have a younger brother. I was born into this family. There's implications of that. I was born an American. I was born into this community in Southern California that was a wonderful community. We had great education. We had great health care. I was loved and cared for by my parents. And some of you might say that I was spoiled. And you would be right. I was spoiled. I was loved so much by my parents. I always had nice clothes. We always had new cars. We had a nice home. I remember one time when I was about 16 years old and I was bored because I was 16 years old. And I was complaining that I was bored. And my mother, I still remember this. She said to me, "Well, why don't you just go over to Disneyland?" And I thought, I will probably remember that because one of these days I'm going to try to tell my children somewhere, "Well, why don't you just go up for a hike in the hills?" You know, I had Disneyland. I had Knott's Berry Farm. We had the beach right there. I had 101 amusements all around me. I had all these things that I could look to. My father owned his own business. I don't think my father ever borrowed a dollar in his entire life. We were well off. We did well. And I was spoiled. Now then, I'm not saying this to brag, and I know that some of you were not so fortunate. And I've heard such terrible stories of some of you've had terrible parents. Some of you don't even know who your parents were. Some of you had parents who were alcoholics. Some were abusive. I have heard stories of those who've had abusive fathers or abusive mothers, and of terrible circumstances, of just terrible, terrible, bad childhoods. Interestingly enough, my father had one of those bad childhoods. My father's dad died when he was 3 years old. In 1913, there was no Social Security. There was no death benefits. My grandfather was an engineer for the Missouri Pacific Railroad, and after he died, they were just pretty much destitute. And so my grandmother moved her family from Kansas to California. And she remarried, and my dad did not get along with his stepfather. A familiar story that a lot of people tell. And so he was raised by his sisters, and by the time he was 12, he was literally out on the streets. He worked every dirty job. He lived a real hard life. Now, some of you can relate to that. Some of you know what it's like to have parents of low character. Some of you grew up poor. Some members here, and this will surprise some of us young people and some of you younger than me, some of our members grew up not having running water in their home. They had no electricity in their home. They grew up very poor. Some had never known a birthday party. I know people who have never had a birthday party in their life, who never had a Christmas. Now, see, for me, birthdays and Christmas were wonderful because my dad didn't have any birthday parties and he didn't have any Christmases and he never had any toys. So guess who got toys when he was a little kid? Like I said, I was spoiled because my dad knew what it was like to go without. You've heard of the inner city kids who, when they go to camp and when they go to different activities, that were told, don't talk to them too much about God as being a father. Because to them, a father's a scoundrel. To them, a father is somebody who abandons them. Someone that they can't trust. He's someone who abuses them. There is an entire religious system that has sprung out from Christianity that doesn't really emphasize God as father. What it emphasizes is Mary, the mother of God. Because to them, a father did not resonate like a mother did. They pray to, they trust in, they hope in this mother figure of God. Because fathers can't be trusted. The number one name of a Mexican and the number one name of our students in our English classes is, for women, Maria Guadalupe. Maria, the Virgin Mother. Guadalupe is the pagan version of that. They've got their bases covered. So much of life is out of our control. Some of us have been blessed anyway, but some of you wish that you could have had a choice in this whole matter, and you wish you could do it over, and you wish you had a choice and a decision in this all thing. One of the things about being God's children is He gave us a choice. He allowed us to choose. We get to choose. We get a new start. We get a new family. We get a new father. We get a new life. Some have been blessed by adoption, by these loving parents who would take them into their family. And we have gotten involved in this radical adoption by God. And so John is wanting to emphasize this to us. See how great a love the Father has bestowed on us that we would be called children of God. And such we are. And then in verse 2, beloved, now we are children of God. John is emphatic here. How do you think John said this? If he was standing before you, how do you think he'd be speaking? Would this be a monotone? And we are called children of God, and thus we are. I imagine that he's saying this with total amazement. We have been called children of God. That's what we are. I think that he would be having this astonishment, this enthusiasm. Maybe he's just shaking his head in unbelief. Maybe he's choking back tears because he says that we would be called. He realized that we are called children of God. Thus we are. I'm part of this. Look at this and be staggered by it. Be awed by it. Breathe it in. The NIV reads this way, see what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. I like that word, lavished. In a couple of weeks, we are going to have Thanksgiving. And if it's a traditional Thanksgiving that I'm accustomed to, there's going to be turkey and you pile that on your plate, and there's going to be mashed potatoes and you pile that on your plate, and there's going to be dressing and you pile that on your plate and whatever else you want to pile on your plate. But the best thing for me is this giblet gravy, and you start pouring it over the turkey, you start pouring it over the mashed potatoes, you start pouring it over the dressing, and pretty soon it's starting to flow over the edge of the plate if you're not careful, because you just lavish that gravy on. And he said, the love of God has been lavished on you. He's just pouring it, he's just going over the edges. Oh, this is good stuff. He just lavishes this on. How could God lavish his love on you any more that you should be called the sons of God and you are children of God? How could he do anything more for you? See how deeply God loves us, that he allows us to be his children. The world assumes that everybody is children of God because that's so easy and that's so cheap. And then you could say, I don't really need the church. I don't need Jesus. I'm good enough. Because they don't grasp. They don't know us. For this reason, the world does not know us because it did not know him. They don't know God. They don't know who Jesus is. They don't appreciate what we have as Christians because they have no concept of God. And to be a child of God, oh, we're all children of God. And many Christians, I think, don't grasp this either, that we are children of God. They don't particularly seem to be wanting to be with the Father or be with his children or to be even in worship. And, well, okay, if I have to be in worship, but after that, I'm done. He said, we are children of God. And there are implications for this. Just as being born to our earthly parents have implications, there's implications here. And everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure. We purify ourselves because he's pure. And back in verse 29 of chapter 2, if you know that he is righteous, you know that everyone who practices righteousness is born of him. Well, we're righteous too because he is righteous. We're to be like him. What we say today is, the nut doesn't fall far from the tree. I've got some of my dad's personality. I have some of his character traits. One of the things I have is his goofy sense of humor. My dad liked to tell corny jokes. And you go, oh, boy. And then what I find is, I'm telling those same corny jokes. And my kids would go, oh boy, Dad, you're so goofy. You know what I find? When they're not paying attention, I find they're telling the same stupid jokes. Because the nut doesn't fall far from the tree. And there's these other characteristics. And one of the strangest days in your life is when you're going to be saying something and you're going to hear your mother's voice come out of your mouth. You're going to hear your dad's voice come out of your mouth and you say, I was never ever going to say that. I would never say that. And then here comes, blah, my dad. Hi, my mom. Because you spend so much time with them, now you're starting to take on their characteristic traits. You're starting to take on their personality. And we have been people who are children of God. And he says, if you're children of God, you're going to be pure like he's pure. You're going to be righteous like he's righteous. You're going to spend so much time listening to what God is saying in his word. And all of a sudden, you find that's coming out of your mouth. I'm repeating the very words of God. I'm becoming just like him. I'm identifying with him. He says in verse 2, beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we will be. We know that when he appears, we will be like him because we will see him just as he is. When he appears, back in chapter 2 again, back in verse 28, he says, now little children, abide in him so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. The story of Jesus is not over. It's not finished. Sometimes we think that when this has been done and he's been risen from the dead, that it's all over. It's not over. The last chapter has not been written yet. There is still history to be made in regards to Jesus. And it says he's going to appear. He's going to have a second coming. Every week we take the Lord's Supper. And Paul tells us that we are doing this until he comes. To remember this is going to be until he comes. We are waiting for the appearing of Jesus, that second coming. This great supper, one of the things I like, it ties us back to the very first time in that upper room that Jesus partook of it with his disciples. And then week after week, we have this chain just linked together, one link after another, that ties us to the past. And there's going to be a one link to another tying us to the coming of Jesus. He says he's going to appear again. And we will be changed. When I first started preaching, I was in Ventura, California, and one of our ministers there and one of our elders had a running argument. I had the misfortune of sitting in on one of these arguments one time, and the argument was about what we were going to look like at the resurrection. Who would have thought that was a good thing to argue about? And after listening to these, I went here to 1 John 3 and I said, you know, if John doesn't know what we're going to look like, I'm pretty sure that you guys don't either. But we're going to look like Jesus, whatever that is. It's going to be beyond our comprehension. I don't think our finite minds can figure out what it's going to be like. So why are you having this great discussion week after week? Why are you going over it over and over and over? In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says it's like a seed that you plant in the ground. The plant that comes out from the seed looks nothing like the seed. You put a corn seed in it, it doesn't look like a stalk of corn. You plant a flower seed, little teeny flower seed, and it makes into this beautiful plant, this beautiful flower. And in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 42, Paul has been talking about this idea of a seed and the different bodies that God has created for the different planets and the different stars, and how each seed has its own body. And then he says, so also in the resurrection of the dead, it is sown a perishable body. It is raised an imperishable body. It is sown in dishonor. It's raised in glory. It's sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. What is it going to look like in the resurrection? How will we look? I don't know. He hasn't told us yet. All he knows, we're going to look like Jesus. It's going to be beyond our comprehension. Now imagine that you go to England. Craig Benjamin from the Southwest Church is going to England to be a missionary there. Do you suppose that he, and if you went there, do you suppose that you would be invited to be a part of the royal family? I don't think so. I don't think they would care who you are or know anything about you. Prince William is not a prince by his own doing. He had nothing to do with it whatsoever. He was born into it. His privileges that he has and his expectations that are upon him. And he has a different perspective of life than you and I would. We talk about his Father's throne. He doesn't. He talks about my throne. That's my throne. I'm going to that. That's going to be my throne. He has a different way of looking at it because he realizes who he is. And so he lives his life so much different than everybody else. I kind of wonder sometimes how it could, wouldn't it be wonderful? But then you see all the expectations placed upon him. I'm thinking, no, that'd be miserable. But that's who he's been born into. That's what he's taking on. One of the stories I used to love when I was growing up was The Prince and the Pauper. Mark Twain. I liked the Disney version. If you don't know about the story of The Prince and the Pauper, Mark Twain wrote that in 1881. It's an old story. It is set in 1547. It's a historical novel that he wrote about a boy named Tom Canty. And Tom Canty was born into this abusive, poor home. His father was a drunk and abused him. And it's about Prince Edward VI. The son of Henry VIII. And in the story, Tom Canty is hanging out near the door of the palace, and these two boys meet, and they have this uncanny similarity in appearance. And so the prince invites him to come into the palace, and they begin to talk, and Tom is fascinated with what it's like to be a prince, and actually the prince is fascinated with what it would be like to be a regular person. And so they decide they're going to change clothes. They switch clothes. And the prince walks out of the palace as Tom Canty. And he is going to be abused by his friend's drunken father. He is going to be abused by society. He's going to see all of the ugliness that the world has. And Tom Canty, though, on the other hand, he's being treated like a prince. And in fact, the office officials think that he must have had an illness because he seems to have a memory loss. He can't remember exactly how to behave in court. Well, in the whole story of things, Prince Edward VI has hid the great seal so he could go find it and prove that he's really the prince when time comes. Well, Tom Canty has found that in an old suit of armor. And Tom Canty doesn't know what it is. And they're looking all over for it, and he said, well, if you told me what it looked like, I could have told you where it was. He was using it to crack nuts with. And so in the whole story, Henry VIII dies, and Tom Canty is going to be coronated as the king, and the real prince finds out. He comes and shows up, and then the end of the story, they come back to the rightful place, and Tom Canty becomes a friend of the palace, and you know, it's Disney. We all live happily ever after. It's this good story. I think, you know, we have that, we can relate that because we have such a struggle sometimes to fit in and to try to change and to be like the children of God. And there's going to come a day when miraculously we're all going to be changed. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know we'll be like him and the struggle will be over. And so what John is trying to do is just encourage us to realize who we are. Here's real Christianity. It's realizing that we are children of God. Recognize all the blessings and privileges you have. The invitation that we offer every Sunday, in fact, every day we can. The invitation is, until he comes, you can be born again. It's a limited time offer. When the trumpet sounds, that means the offer's over. But until it comes, you can be children of God. What an amazing thing to be able to be a child of God. And brethren, fellow Christians, brothers, realize we are children of God. Our behavior, our life's got to be so much different than everyone else's because we've been privileged to be his children. We're going to extend the invitation. If you need to respond in any way this morning, you can do so. Let's stand and sing together.